Blog Talk Radio.
Well, give it the old college try. Only I never went to college. Good evening, welcome. Come on in. Come on in to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
non-degreed Dave Binkley from the Weirdness Really Bad Movie.
You are degreed. You at least have an associate's, do you not?
No, I do not.
All right.
3 years of college don't get you nothing if you just have 3 years of the same class.
Good point.
I have a master's in speech 101. Okay.
Wow. And speaking of turkeys.
Yeah.
It is Thanksgiving weekend. And we were yucking it up yesterday with a little Amos and Andy. We had Jack Benny.
Yes. And we had Life with Luigi. You know, it's just a shame that these shows kind of get berated a little bit because of how people are sensitive to how people portrayed them. And I think all of them were just there to entertain. What a shame. What a shame.
It is. And what a shame that we're here tonight. With a couple more turkeys for you. Well, not really. These are actually good crime, sort of a radio noir stories about Thanksgiving and toikies.
Yes, with Jeff Reagan, investigator, and Casey, crime photographer.
Oh, good. And, that means a little Jack Webb, does it not?
It does mean a little Jack Webb, even though he wasn't very tall, but it does mean a little Jack Webb. And this was about his third regular series, which led to a couple of radio roles, but his next one would be Joe Friday in Dragnet. That would be his next role. So the fact is, he left this role to become that role. So he played this for 1 year. He was Pat Novak for Hire, of course, which I think, didn't we play one of those not too long ago?
Yep.
And then he was also Johnny Madero. And now he was a crime buster. Well, but, you know, he was all over the place. He was in at least six of the Escapes. I know that he was in at least half of the Michael Shane Private Detectives. And he was there as the French lieutenant in the police department there. So Jack Webb was a very active character actor, and finally leading up to the role that he really wanted when he created Dragnet, NBC wasn't real excited about it. They were kind of liking his show that we have tonight there, Jeff Reagan and investigator, private investigator. But he sold them on this, and this is after he played a small part in the movie He Walked by Night, where he was kind of a forensic scientist in the movie. He just loved the whole way that was done and really pushed NBC, and it went through the roof.
Jack Webb is one of those character actors, too, that there's a number of them from the 30s, 40s, 50s on radio, television, and in the movies too, that either could play a good hardened policeman or they could be on the other side of the law too.
Yeah.
Or like a private investigator somewhere in between.
Right. And I'm just thinking here, he is did very well in television, not only with Dragnet, but as a producer of other programs as well. And because of course he went on to created and produced Adam 12 and then Emergency. I'm trying to think, there was another one that he did with Jackie Cooper that didn't last too long.
What the heck was that?
Code One or something like that. I don't really remember, but
yeah.
It didn't last. I think that's one of those times that on networks that if you didn't hit something in the first 5 or 6 weeks, you were gone.
And yeah, I think you weren't going to hit it.
Yeah, even though Jackie Cooper was in it and he was a producer, that one just didn't make it. And he was thinking of returning to bringing Joe Friday back to television again after all that time. But he passed before that came to pass.
Indeed. And our other story, after Jeff Regan, we'll have Casey Crime Photographer. Another radio noir classic.
With some Ohio roots, his main sponsor by this time was the Anchor Hocking and the glassware company down in southern Ohio. They had a national distribution center and was across the country. But they were anchored right here in Ohio at a particular time. And itself had many incarnations known throughout the years as Casey Crime Photographer, but also known as Crime Photographer, Flash Gun Casey, and Casey Press Photographer. All of those names it was under one time or another. And we don't have it. I don't know if there's any recordings of it out there. There was even a short time where Jim Backus played. That's right. Thurston Howell III played Casey briefly. And I'm thinking about this, Dale. Have you ever seen Jim Backus in a serious role? I've seen him in nothing but comedic roles that I can recall.
Yeah, one. I can think of one. He was James Dean's father in... That's right.
He was.
And he played that very, very well as an angry father.
And then in the TV series in the 50s, I Married Joan, he was kind of Joan Bennett's straight man.
Yeah.
He was kind of like an I Love Lucy type show. And that's what that particular show was. It was kind of a different only. Instead of being a band leader, he was a judge. And she had these harebrained schemes and things like that. I don't know if she had an Ethel, but he was the calm one, the straight one in the family. That's about as close to anything. You're right, but I had forgotten about him, a Rebel Without a Cause, as the father. Yeah.
Yeah. Lest we forget, but I often forget about that too because he does play so many comic roles besides Thurston Howell III and some of the old albums.
Yeah.
He was kind of a raucous comedian there for a while. He did a lot of innuendo type humor early in his career.
He did, and was all over the place and a lot of radio. Early television. Even did several things after Gilligan's Island. But I just had a hard time seeing him in a serious role until you're right. I had forgotten about him being in Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah.
Well, tremendous
That's because
movie.
I too am a rebel without a without a clue.
Without a clue.
Yes. great radio.
That's what we're looking at tonight. That's what we're looking at tonight.
And so let's jump into some Jack Webb. Let's get started off with some really good stuff. This one's called Pilgrim's Progress. Jeff Regan Investigator from?
From! Look it up here. November 25th, 1948.
I get 10 a day and expenses from a detective bureau run by a guy named Anthony J. Lyon. They call me the Lion's Eye.
With Jack Webb as Jeff Regan, the Lion's Eye, stand by for hard-boiled action and mystery and thrilling adventure in tonight's story of the Pilgrim's Progress.
Oh,
The Cosmopolitan Building, 7th Street near Olive, downtown L.A. A mess of granite thrown together by an architect who must have taken his degree on the rock pile of Leavenworth. It's up on the third floor, room 308, right next to a credit dentist who shares his office with a collection agency. On the other side, there's a school for models, and the lion's got sore eyes trying to see through that cloudy glass. International Detective Bureau, Anthony J. Lyon, president. He's also vice president, secretary, treasurer. I work for him. Well, the office isn't much, but there's enough elbow room for a client to write a check. I went to the office Friday night, about 5:20, answering the lion's call. He was sitting behind the desk, sucking on a quarter cigar. He looked real pleased, like a fat lady locked in a cream puff factory.
Man I know had a baby. Plumber named Broman or Groman or something like that.
Mazel tov.
Cancel any arrangements you got for the night. I got something for you to do. Got your car?
It's in the lot.
Gas it up. You're taking a trip.
Where to?
Calabasas. A man wants to see you.
I got no friends out there.
Friend of mine named Hendricks. He counts his money with an adding machine, and his finger's always swollen.
What's the problem?
I don't know. He didn't say. He just called and told me to send out a man.
How much did he give you for a retainer?
When an important man like Hendricks calls, you don't insult him by asking for money.
Oh, stop it, will you? You're the kind of guy who'd steal pennies out of parking meters.
That's enough, Regan.
If one of them turned up empty, you'd sue the city.
Here's the Hendricks address. Now get out there.
All right.
Regan.
Yeah?
Remember, do a good job and I'll give you Thanksgiving off. And I'll pay you.
With what? Cranberries? Well, I headed out Beverly and then up through Hollywood. You know, it's only November, but Santa Claus is breaking out all over the boulevard. I fought my way over Cahuenga Pass, and by the time I was dodging station wagons on Ventura, it was dark. Calabasas is a place with a couple of service stations, a hot dog stand, and a few road signs full of buckshot. The Hendricks place turned out to be about 5 miles down a road that the Indians built for hauling firewater. I guess they couldn't keep the cork in. But the house itself was strictly prohibition stuff. Big pile of slate roof and leaded windows. It looked dark and lonesome. I figured somebody had their holidays mixed.
Hiya, pilgrim!
It was a big fat guy. He was holding a 6-foot gun in the shape of a straightened out tuba. He came closer and I could see his hat. It was a high one with a buckle on it. He was dressed in black and he had buckles all over him. I figured that I'd been eating too much Quaker oats.
What's the matter, pilgrim? A little shooting make you nervous?
That's a big gun there.
Shoots musket balls. Good for Indians.
Well, I'm no Indian.
Oh, I wasn't aiming at you.
Well, that gun wouldn't know the difference.
It's a blunderbuss. Great weapon.
Is it?
I show you. Hey, you prop it up on a crutch.
You keep fooling with that thing, and we'll both need one.
Shut up. Be quiet. Lower the barrel. Lots of powder.
Look, why don't you give that thing back to the museum?
He does it. It's more powder. Gotta use lots of this black powder.
Buster, you need black coffee. Come on, give me that thing before it blows up in your face. You broke a window.
Oh, it's all right. It was only the attic.
You live here?
Of course not, pilgrim. I'm Miles Standish.
Well, where's the rest of the party?
All inside, talking to John Olden.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Oh, right, you just think I'm kidding, don't you? Pilgrim, you just haven't got the Mayflower spirit.
No, you drank it all.
It's just cider. Nothing better on a cold New England night.
Thanksgiving's not for a week. Come on, get off it.
Shh. Hark.
What's the matter? Put that down.
I'm not going to shoot him. He's a friendly type.
Brother Regan?
Yeah?
If thou wilt follow me, please.
Oh, you too, huh?
I beg your pardon.
Okay, okay.
Well, so long, pilgrim.
Yeah, keep your powder dry, Stanley.
I'll see you on Plymouth Rock.
Okay, this way, Brother Regan.
Now, look, Sunshine, you work here.
My name is Phelps.
Why don't you lock that guy up?
I'd be outnumbered, sir. 21 pilgrim.
Bad winter. They make you wear those corduroy knickers?
Knee breeches, sir. It was Priscilla's idea.
You need a union.
I need more shapely legs. Through here.
Well, that's quite a place you got.
Well, it looks better without the decorations, sir.
Yeah. How do you keep from stepping on these pumpkins?
It's only when they use them for bowling that it's difficult.
Come on, fill me in. What's this all about?
Thanksgiving, sir. 1621. Okay, this room here, sir. Go right in.
Okay.
Shut the door. Shut it.
Mr. Hendricks around?
He's not here. Come over, sit down.
Who are you, Priscilla?
Don't. Please don't say another word of that silly rigmarole, or I'll start screaming.
Yeah, well, I could use a little yell myself.
I'm Agnes. I'm Mrs. Hendricks. Oh, Agnes.
It doesn't make any difference.
Talk to my friends. Didn't I say sit down?
Yes, you did, and I didn't. So you don't like the party, huh?
I'm not much of a Puritan, Mr. Regan.
Well, that Great Dane says the masquerade was your idea.
Oh, help, this stupid. This goes on all weekend, Mr. Regan. It's called a turkey shoot.
Oh, so that's it. Who gets the bird?
The Pilgrim Fathers, my husband's friends. They ought to be shot, every one of them.
Yeah, well, I'm not from the SPCA.
Oh, wait a minute, Mr. Regan. I like you.
That's not the point.
I won't bore you.
Your husband might.
Him. He's crazy, Mr. Regan. Crazy as the things he does. Shooting, drinking, spending money.
A hard life.
I don't know how I stood it for as long as I have. My lawyer says I'm the most patient woman in the world.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the conversation, Ms. Hendricks.
Why did my husband send for you?
I don't know.
Yes, you do. You do know. Tell me.
I don't know.
Please. You don't realize what kind of a man my husband can be.
I never met him.
You don't know how much I need help. How lonely I am.
Well, where is he?
I'll tell you if you promise to come back to me.
No, I'll write you a letter.
He's out in the shed, other side of the patio.
Thanks.
I wouldn't act this way if I weren't so frightened. You don't know what it is to be frightened all the time.
No, but I'm learning.
I wish you'd stick around, Mr. Regan.
Well, thanks, Mrs. Hendricks, but the pin feathers are a little sharp. Mrs. Hendricks went back to her worrying, and I wound my way through the house looking for the back entrance. My legs got tired before it finally showed on the other side of the pantry. It poured out into a flagstone patio as big as the Palladium. A walk took me to a shed. It was a two-story redwood place that must have made a loud noise on the cash register, and alongside, fenced in with chicken wire, was a whole population of turkeys. Well, I went into the shed. A little round-faced guy with pink skin was leaning over a barrel of cider. He wore a blue silk smoking jacket with gold initials EH on the pocket. When he caught my footsteps, his head bobbed up and he gave me a deep look like he was trying to see the back of my eyeball.
Yes?
I'm Regan, International Detective Bureau.
Oh, I've been expecting you. I'm Hendricks.
Yeah, I know. Why the fireworks?
Huh? Oh! Miles Standish. Just having fun. It's a party, you know. Big party we're having here.
Yeah, well, the neighbors will complain.
Ah, neighbors. None for miles around. That's why I like it out here. Have trouble finding any?
You ought to put up signs.
Signs? Glass of cider, Regan? Carefully.
I'm not thirsty.
Yeah. That's not what it's for. Strong kind. Oh, go on. Thanksgiving soon. Get the spirit.
No, I can hold out till Thursday.
Suit yourself. Excuse me. Yeah. There's going to be quite a party here, you know.
Your wife's got a different version.
Oh, you spoke to her?
Yeah.
You were told to come out here to see me?
I got sidetracked.
It's not good for a man in your position.
All right, Hendricks, why am I here?
What'd she say to you?
I forgot.
Regan, you're making me angry.
Now, look, mister, you didn't get me out here to make a pilgrim out of me.
Hey, no, no, of course not. Fine woman, Mrs. Hendricks. We've been married for years, you know, happily. Fine, fine little woman. Just she makes me a little nervous at times.
Mm-hmm. She like the sound of guns going off?
Ah, she shouldn't get so excited. Boys just having a little fun. It's only once a year. What's wrong with that?
Come on now, what's the job?
Didn't the line tell you?
He said you would.
Oh, well, nothing to be so mysterious about. I've just got a package I want you to take to. Here it is. A turkey.
You got me all the way out here to play escort to that bird?
Well, I just want to be friendly. Here. Now, go on. It's a long way back to L.A. And you want to be there for Thanksgiving.
What's the difference? I got the turkey. I can celebrate any time. 60 miles to do a delivery job, bird. Well, I wandered back to my car, and I listened to the crickets and the gunshots try to outdo each other. And then I dumped the turkey into the back seat, and I started the car down the drive. I just zoned around the bend when the headlights caught a pair of buckled shoes and black knee breeches. Miles Standish was lying face down in the dirt, and there was a wet shine on his side. He was breathing hard. Blunderbuss was lying beside him, and I figured that he blew out the wrong end. I would have gone for the Hendricks phone and a doctor, but I got a good look at the holes in him, and I headed for a hospital instead. The blunderbuss may have been kicking up a fuss, but the holes in Miles Standish were 20th century, about the size of a 32. Well, I turned him over to an emergency hospital, and I put a call into the sheriff's office. I gave the story to a Lieutenant Robinson, and then I headed back toward town. At the Lion's place, the lights were still on, so I figured he didn't have company. I rapped on the door, and he flung it open before the echo could die away. He had a carving knife in one hand, and he was wearing an apron. His eyes were big, and he had an eager look, like a college couple on Mulholland Drive.
Regan, you're back.
Oh, now that takes a big brain.
I've been waiting for you. You know, I had a chance to go to a classy party tonight. Russian caviar and champagne and favors to all the guests. Know why I didn't go?
You lost your crash suit, huh?
I said to myself, is it fair to go out and have a good time while my employee is working real hard for International Detective?
The answer came out yes, but the party was called off.
Well, as a matter of fact, it was. But I wouldn't have gone anyway. Where is it?
Where's what?
The package from Hendricks.
Now, you can change your plans, Big Shot. You're getting a bundle of trouble instead.
What do you mean?
Turkeys aren't the only thing they're knocking off out on that ranch.
Huh?
Somebody's handy with a 32 and he's found a target.
You've been drinking?
Check the county emergency hospital. They'll show you the holes.
I send you out on a simple little job and you come back with a crazy story about a shooting. You're out of your mind.
Now listen, you, there's a big smell out in Calabasas.
What about my turkey?
The sheriff's office are going to have a lot of questions. You got the answers?
I don't know anything. I was miles away.
Well, then find out something. Check into the guy who shot. Find out who he is, what he does, and what he was doing out at Hendricks.
Where are you going?
To scratch around in the Hendricks closet. They tell different stories about their wedded bliss.
Hey, Regan.
Yeah?
Where's my turkey?
It's too rich for your blood, Fatso. Stick to chicken. Well, I left him standing there with his apron hanging out. Miles Standish might get enough wind to do that extra hole to say who shot him, but more likely not. Anyway, with the bucket load he had, he would have sworn it was the last of the Mohicans. But there was an angle to that Hendricks woman, even if it didn't show. So I walked up the street to where my car was nuzzling a lamppost. The turkey and I were just going to wake up a newspaper office, only something changed my mind. A newspaper. It was wrapped around a bundle, and the bundle was under a guy's arm, and the arm was shutting the door of my car. Good evening, Pop.
Yeah. Hi.
Going somewhere?
Sure, sure. Find a place to sleep, that's all.
Want a cigarette?
Say, I don't mind if I do. Thought you was a bull for a minute. You mind if I take two?
No, help yourself.
My brother smokes, too. And not much in the streets these days.
Yeah, it's bad all over.
Yeah, something ought to be done.
No, stick around, Pop.
No, Sonny, you give me smokes. I don't hit you for cash. It's a rule I got.
I'll make the touch.
What's that?
What's in the newspaper?
Russia.
Inside.
A funny paper.
Yeah, sure.
Well, now take it easy, boss. The guy's got a right to his privacy.
You weren't sleeping in my car.
Oh, so that's it. Yours, huh? Small world, ain't it?
Yeah, come on, let's unwrap.
It's Thanksgiving, Mac. Ain't you heard of Thanksgiving?
I'm gonna plug my ears. Give.
Now, please, Mac, show me the spirit. Once in my life, both drumsticks.
Stop it. You're breaking my heart.
I mean it, Mac. Let me have it. I'll break the wishbone for you, sonny. I will. You ain't got no use for all that meat, have you? Oh, you have, huh? So long, Mac.
Hey, wait a minute. Hold it.
No, let go of my arm.
That was a pretty dance, but you should have changed your shoes.
What's that?
You didn't get those buckles in the bread line.
Oh.
Now, come on. Change the record. Who are you?
That's none of your business. Let go of
me. I said talk.
I will not.
You're from the Hendricks place, aren't you? You're from the...
Thank you, Phelps.
That's all right. Got the bird?
Sure. Let's go.
Yeah. Nighty-night, Pilgrim.
It looks like Jeff Regan got himself into a little bit of trouble here.
You know, there are more concussions on these old radio detective shows than there is in the NFL every Sunday.
Yeah.
Everybody gets bonked over the head. Yeah, you know one thing that really kind of sticks out in my mind, I don't know whether we've really talked about that. You know, here he is, he's smoking a cigarette, he's offering cigarettes. All these shows, all of the detectives, they all smoke and either looking for a smoke or offering a smoke or something. It was amazing how smoking was such a way of life back then.
Ah, the good old days.
But, yeah, so even if what was that, Mad Men, which was about advertising men in the 1960s, it was the American Movie Classics program. You literally would go into rooms and they would be literally smoke filled. And that's the way things were at one point. I know
Dave,
that when I started.
I remember elementary school, and I swear it must have been kindergarten or first grade. Somebody sent me to the teacher's lounge.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Talk about an indoor cloud. Those teachers were puffing away in there. I couldn't believe it.
When I first started in 79 in the radio reading, and several people that were volunteers, so they were actually also broadcast people as well, I would say probably 95. About 90% of the people that were there smoked. At the present now, it's like 98% of the volunteers don't smoke. But that we're just talking from 79 till, you know, present day.
Wow. How things have changed.
Yeah. Even though the Surgeon General was warning us since the 60s, you know, finally started to sink in so we could... We needed that warning so we could sue the tobacco companies for making that terrible stuff.
Ah, they're delicious. No, sorry. I don't know what you're talking about. If they're good enough for the Flintstones, Winston's are good enough for me. Want to welcome Vorpal Byte and Ed Ricanora into the chat. And it looks like Fogsbane just dropped in. Hi, guys. Another full night here at Erie House. We are in the middle of a wonderful story starring Jack Webb, Jeff Regan investigator in Pilgrim's Progress.
Yeah, can you imagine this guy is getting, his salary is 10 bucks a day plus expenses. You know, now, and he's the guy that usually works 7 days a week, it seemed. But even so, it's 6 days a week, 60 bucks. But In 48, would that have been a decent salary for risking your life? I don't know. I mean, to look back and see what a policeman was paid back in 68. It was so funny the way that, you know, Sam Spade never seemed to have a client live long enough to collect his fee. And then Richard Diamond, private detective, his was $100 a day. So he only needed a couple clients 2 days a piece for a month, and then all of his expenses would be taken care of. and he did this by buying the biggest ad he could in the yellow pages, a full page ad in the yellow page, and that's how he got his name out, and people would recognize that and come to him.
Yep, then he built himself on his reputation.
Yep, hundred bucks a day for him, and yet. Poor little old Jeff Regan, who was the lion's eye, he got a total of 10 bucks a day plus expenses.
Yep, and to get conked on the head, if you're just joining us, Jeff Regan was exploring a little bit of a mystery here and got dinged in the head. Let's listen to part two of Pilgrim's Progress.
You are listening to the story of the Pilgrim's Progress, tonight's adventure with Jeff Regan, investigator. Commissions are still available in the Army Nurse Corps. Graduate registered nurses between the ages of 21 and 45 may qualify for service with this fine organization. If you are interested in joining the Army Nurse Corps and believe you qualify for a commission, apply to the Adjutant General, Washington, D.C. And now, back to Jeff Regan, investigator, and the story of the Pilgrim's Progress.
Well, none of it made sense. The Lion sent me out to pick up a turkey on the Hendricks Ranch in Calabasas, and the Mr. and Mrs. were having an old-fashioned turkey shoot, and all the guests carried blunderbusses and dressed like pilgrims. Only it wasn't just the turkeys who were acting as targets. One of the pilgrims ended up with some .32-caliber holes in them. And then the Hendricks lackey and a buddy shoved a gun at me and stole the Lion's bird. Well, I picked myself up and I went home. A heavy man was doing a heist job on my icebox. He was pouring himself a glass of milk to wash down a sandwich he was munching on.
Hi, Regan.
You're right ahead. Help yourself.
Yeah, thanks. I didn't know how long I was going to have to wait, and I was getting hungry.
There's a restaurant just up the block.
I like it better this way, homemade. Fix you a sandwich? Pretty good deviled ham.
Come on, let's close the box and open your mouth, buddy.
Why not? We had a date, remember? Robertson, sheriff's office.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
You don't mind me coming in like this, do you?
What if I did?
Well, I'd leave. Sanctity of the home, you know. You can throw me out even though I got a badge.
Let's cut away the fat, mister. What do you want?
Answers to a couple of questions. What were you doing at the Hendricks place?
Picking up a turkey?
Well, that's a new one.
Now, look, you ask him. I'll answer him. Never mind the feature page.
How long have you known the Hendricks?
Never met him before.
Wrong answer.
What do you mean?
We found this out at the Hendricks house. A page torn out of the yellow directory with a red circle around international detective.
Now, that doesn't say a thing.
Maybe yes, maybe no. I'm still scratching around.
It'll ruin your manicure.
You know, Regan, you don't seem to realize the seriousness of this. That pilgrim you dragged in died.
Well, I figured.
We don't like unsolved murders messing up our record books.
Well, then you're wasting your time here.
I got lots of it. I don't come up for pension for 12 more years. What was that pilgrim's name?
He gave me Miles Standish.
Sounds like a fake.
Well, don't count on it. I once knew a John Smith.
Give me the real name.
I don't have it.
All right. He's an out-of-town boy, but we'll track him down. Now, straighten out something for me, Regan. How long did you say you knew the Hendricks?
Look, I gave this to you once. Nothing's changed.
How come we find a $5,000 check in that joker's pocket made out of cash and signed by Hendricks? Go ahead, answer. Just don't make a date. You may not be available.
Yeah?
Mr. Regan, this is Mrs. Hendricks. I must see you right away.
Who did you say?
Mrs. Hendricks, you remember?
Charlie? No, there's no Charlie here. You must have the wrong number.
Sort of annoying, isn't it, Regan, when you get a wrong number late at night?
Well, it happens.
Sure, it does. Happened to me once.
Anything else you want?
Another deviled ham sandwich?
Kitchen's closed.
Pretty rotten hospitality.
Well, you weren't asked.
Okay, I gotta move anyway. See you later, Regan. Keep the mud off your shoes.
E-R-3-4-0-8. Mrs. Hendricks, this is Regan.
I just called you.
Well, I couldn't talk. What do you want?
Can you come out, Mr. Regan? Right away.
You're still lonely?
Things aren't going well.
No, murder's like that.
I've got to talk to somebody. Won't you please come?
Give me a reason.
I can tell you some things now I couldn't mention before.
Like why your husband wrote a $5,000 check to the dead man?
Check? But there must be some mistake.
What do you mean?
My husband couldn't write a check that large. He doesn't have any money of his own. It's all in my name.
All right. Put a lantern in the window, lady. I'll need some light. Well, I headed out there fast. But when I raised a racket with a brass knocker, nothing happened. I tried a window, and a couple of scratches later, I was in the hall. The place looked empty, like the Rose Bowl on January 2nd. I found Ms. Hendricks' room, where I talked to her and stepped inside. The decorations were different. Regan, I got something for you.
It better be good.
You're going into overtime.
What do you mean?
Bring some boys out to the Hendricks place with a wet rag. Somebody blew out Mr. Hendricks' fuse. Well, I backed out of the room and I made it to the bar trying to turn up a bottle. In the corner, something else turned up instead, another dead body. The turkey Phelps and his buddy had stolen from me. Somebody real eager had done a carving job on it before it was even cooked. They'd torn it apart like they were looking for something. Well, it was morning before the sheriff's boys cleaned up the Hendricks mess when we got back to town. Robinson had a few more questions, but I was still short on the answers. Ballistics had one, though. Same gun did the job on both Miles Standish and Hendricks. That's all. Homicide was getting places in a hurry, like a snail hauling a piano. Well, the lion was waiting for me outside the sheriff's office, and he pulled me to the side. His eyes were lit up like a pinball machine, and you could tell he'd caught the scent of a greenback.
They treat you okay, Regan?
Good enough.
No rough stuff?
Well, nothing that shows, no.
Take it. We're in luck. I've been turning up things. We've been playing the wrong horse.
Well, that figures you're good at picking losers.
Hendricks is a piker, a social climber.
He's a dead one.
I'll send him flowers, but I'm telling you, he could only write checks for 5 G's.
With a big bounce.
Somebody else in this thing can write bigger ones.
Well, let me guess who.
Mrs. Hendricks, that's who. I tell you, Regan, it pays to keep up your connection.
How high can she go?
The sky is below sea level.
What else you got?
Standish is a phony moniker.
That's grammar school.
Real name, Jeffrey Kelly, age 42. He's a wholesale jeweler. He had a little business with Mrs. H. $250,000 worth.
That's going to run up his taxes.
He can handle it.
What did he do for her?
I drew a blank, but he deposited her certified check in the bank yesterday morning.
Mm-hmm. How does Phelps figure?
I don't know.
Well, who's the little man in the big overcoat?
I can't do everything. You got to do some work, too.
Yeah, sure.
Now, find Mrs. Hendricks. Offer her the services of international detective at our usual nominal rate. But don't underplay it. Now, get busy.
Where are you going?
Home to bed. A man's got to get some sleep.
Well, the time was ticking out, but the game wasn't over yet. We figured to have a fast finish, and the lion had a pretty good idea about catching some shut-eye. So I moved to the office and a stretch out on the couch. But through the glass, I could see there was a light on. Company was inside.
Crestview 2045. Phelps, no luck. I looked all over. I told you, I saw the place apart. Nothing's here. I'm trying my best. Stop harping. Oh, well, it must be someplace else. Okay, right away.
Leave a nickel, Buster.
Huh? Oh, Regan.
You looking for something?
You, Pilgrim.
What else?
Plymouth Rock.
Come on, punk, level it.
It coax me.
All right, Nick, because you've been crying for this. Now, flatten out. Well, it felt good to watch the big guy fall. He folded in like a steeple in an earthquake. When his head bounced on the lion's carpet, I figured he was due for a long sleep, so I went through his pockets. Ticket stubs from the prize fights, the gun, and a pocket knife I dumped into the safe. It was a pass to the Don's game on November 25th. He must have swiped that from his boss, so I filed that in the lion's desk for future reference. But this guy Phelps had taken orders from somebody besides Hendricks. I just heard him do it on the phone. So when I turned up an old envelope with 832 North Palm stretched in the back, I crossed my fingers. He'd been calling a Crestview number, and the phone book said that I had a lead. North Palm was in the Crestview Exchange area. So I called for the cops to sweep up Brother Phelps, and I climbed back onto my broomstick. I drove out through Beverly Hills. I wound up in front of a big Spanish house with potted $10 bills on the driveway. There was a new Nash sticking out of the garage, and I walked around to take a look. But honest John had beat me to it.
Who's there?
Now stick around. I want to talk to you.
Stand back.
You like cars, don't you? Maybe you want a hot rod.
No, you don't. Get away from me.
Hey. Well, it was the little turkey fan that I'd last seen in an overcoat. Phelps' buddy. He took out of there like a cow in deer season, so I let him go. No license. Well, I took a look around the car he'd been sniffing, but nothing showed except the registration. It said Mrs. Agnes Hendricks. I went to the house and rang the doorbell, and she answered.
Oh, what's you? I'm Mr. Regan.
All right, I'll ask myself in.
Yes, come in.
Who are you expecting, John Alden?
No, I'm glad to see you.
No, I don't like girls who break dates.
Oh, that.
Yeah, that's one thing.
I couldn't help it. I couldn't wait for you to come all the way to Calabasas.
You got impatient on account of a body in the house.
You saw him?
Yeah, after I tripped over him in your room.
I didn't do it.
Did I say you did?
You've got to believe me.
Relax. I look like a jury. You've got multiple vision.
Oh, Mr. Regan, I was so frightened. I didn't know which way to turn.
We've been through all that woman driver routine. You don't like your husband. You wanted to get rid of him.
But only in Reno.
All right, now let's get back to page one. You gave 250 G's to a jeweler named Kelly. You bought a rock.
What?
A rock, Plymouth rock. It's a diamond. It's got to be.
Well,
why'd you do it? Who'd you buy it for?
Myself. My lawyer said I should get it for myself, that's all.
He likes you pretty, huh?
No. It was a community property thing. He said I could keep my husband from knowing how much money I had when he asked for a divorce settlement.
Only hubby got wind of the deal.
I guess so.
Well, you're making sense. Only why did he write a check to Kelly?
Well, it was a small one. It must have been for a paste imitation, don't you think?
It's not my business. Keep dealing.
I mean, maybe he planned on switching them and getting my real one.
That's been done.
But he actually did it. Because all through this, there's been a diamond in the place where I always keep it.
All right, you got a strong boy, Phelps. Had him out looking for the real diamond.
What?
And the other guy, the old man, was out in the garage.
No.
Phelps tore up my office, phoned here to you.
Mr. Regan,
now look,
please.
There's been two guys killed.
Mr. Regan.
Good evening, Pilgrim.
Where's your overcoat?
Stand still, please.
Yeah, my foot's in a crack.
Mr. Regan, this is John Allman.
Oh, can it, will you? I've seen him act one part already.
That's true. Mine is the only name that's real. This is my house, Mr. Regan.
Lawyer?
Yes, I came here to see him, Mr. Regan. I just got here before you did.
Be quiet, Agnes.
Well, I got it all now.
You won't keep it.
Phelps took his orders from you.
It's a waste of testimony.
You studded this. Spotted the gem switch. Figured to cash in.
You're losing your chip.
Shut up, will you? I got aces. Hendricks outfoxed you. You never found a real diamond.
Five in a hand draws blood.
Mr. Alden, don't.
Now, you keep out of this, Agnes.
She's not in it. You are.
That's all, Regan.
All right, come on. Drop it. Drop it.
Go with that.
I guess I hit him with the paste one.
Huh?
Look, the diamond, it broke.
Yeah.
It was just luck. I have the other one, too. I thought Alden was honest. I came to tell him I found it in my husband's cider.
Well, that tears it. Come on, Priscilla, that docks the Mayflower. Well, the whole thing folded in like an elephant on a pogo stick. Yeah, the lawyer did it all right, both of them. When he spotted what Hendricks was up to with that diamond switch, he moved in, but not for his client. The jeweler, Miles Standish, alias Kelly, got bumped because he was the only one who could tell the real diamond from a phony. But Hendricks got wise to the muscle act, and so he got shot. Well, the lion was real happy the way it worked out. That dame with the nerves wrote him a check. So he invited me out to Thanksgiving dinner. He offered me any part of the turkey that I wanted. I told him, but I got it anyway.
Jack Webb is featured as Jeff Regan, with Herb Butterfield as Anthony J. Lyons. It's CBS at the same time next week for more hard-boiled action and mystery with Jeff Regan, Investigator. Written by Larry Roman and Jackson Gillis, produced by Sterling Tracy. Featured in tonight's story were Mary Lansing, Marvin Miller, Paul Fries, and Paul DeBove. Original music for this program is by Milton Charles. Bob Stevenson speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Yes, and Paul Fries, too. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Folded like a cheap elephant, or like an elephant on a pogo stick. Like, where did they come up with this stuff?
I don't know. We got to write bad metaphors. We got to write bad metaphors.
And you know what? That really only was in those detective stories. They weren't in police. They weren't police shows. They were in detective stories. And, it's so weird.
What was one though? Like a fat girl in an ice cream factory or something like that? Oh my god, that's so funny.
Seems like every other line he gave had a strange metaphor in. But throughout all that, there still might be something that perhaps you might be able to learn.
There could be. Depends how fast
could
one scrolls. I had no idea. Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garless Moral of the Story.
Okay, neither did I. With apologies to Gar. If you really want to hide your money from your soon-to-be ex, give it to me. You might not get your money back, but neither will your ex. You choose.
Yeah, That's right.
Excuse me. So. Rightfully so, yes.
I had to take care of something there.
Oh, my. Such fun. You know, it's been a fun weekend with comedy last night, which we rarely sit down and do a whole night of that. And then following up tonight with some great detective Thanksgiving stories. Just a lot of fun here. But, you know, Dale, sometimes we do have to bite the bullet and do something we really don't like to do.
Oh, yeah. Pay the bills?
We got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
And we dug up a sponsor to pay the bills for this week.
Yeah. So some fool actually is backing us. Wonder what kind of outfit this could be.
I dare say I think it's legitimate. Perhaps.
Jerky.
Have you ever wanted to go out and eat and you just don't know what you want?
And let's face it, you're a full week away from payday.
There's only one place that will fit your wallet and fill your stomach at the best price.
That's right. You need to head down to Jimmy Bob's Leftover and Roadkill Cafe,
where you can get more your fill without emptying your wallet.
And we use only the finest leftovers from your favorite fast food restaurants.
Wednesdays, we tear down the wall because it's Mexican night.
And they're mostly good. And while you're there, be sure to ask for the daily special.
It changes every day, depending on what gets scraped up for the day.
And if your dinner is served with Goodyear stamped on it, your next meal is on us.
Now, if you couldn't afford that big Thanksgiving dinner, you can now, because that $17.95 Bob Evans feast is yours for only $3.95 at Jimmy Bob's Leftover and Roadkill Cafe.
Right, just turn left at the broken guardrail on I-71, and you'll be only a 40-foot drop from our spacious parking lot.
Remember, there's only one Jimmy Bob's Leftover and Roadkill Cafe.
That's because the other three were shut down by the health department.
Jimmy Bob's Leftover at Roadkill Cafe, where you can afford the best, even if it was yesterday's best. How about that?
Okay.
accompaniment and everything. This must be a handy dandy outfit.
I'm not hungry anymore, Dale.
Folks, all right, I confess it was a skit. But here's the funnier part. Dave wrote it at a restaurant. And I'm thinking, not the finest cuisine in the world.
One never knows. One never knows.
One does not.
Jeez. Does the word stomach pump come to mind? Yes.
Yes. Fortunately, we have yet another fine radio production for you from Casey Crime Photographer.
We do. He was a newspaper for the Morning Express, and he was with the help of Ann Williams, is best remembered, portrayed by Jan Miller, Palmolive's Madge. Remember you're soaking in it? She was
yes,
the one that was. Yeah, that was Jan Miller. That was the one that was the best known reporter's assistant there. The people that played Casey, and they were kind of from. Here's kind of the rundown of it. Air dates from from July 43 to March 44, it was known as Flash Gun Casey. Then from March of 44 until, what was that, June of 45, it was Casey, press photographer. Then from July of 45 till March of 47, it was just known as crime photographer. Then from March of 47 to November of 1950, it was Casey, crime photographer. And in from January 54 till April of 55, he came back as crime photographer. And throughout his run, from the five different series, I was looking to see how many episodes are. I'm not really sure. But the main writer through this whole thing was, he's the only one that seems to be credited, Alonzo Dean Cole. And if you remember, he's the guy that created and wrote and acted in all the episodes of The Witch's Tale.
Oh, be darned. Ooh.
So, once again, Erie House Radio approves that we have a little bit of fun, a little bit of fact, and a whole lot of old-time radio.
Here's part one of Thanksgiving Holiday. Casey, crime photographer from...
November 25th, 1948.
The way that gives that natural look is T-O-N-I, Tony.
Tony. Tony Home Permanent, the wave that gives that natural look, brings you Crime Photographer. Good evening, everyone. This is Bill Cullen greeting you for Tony Home Permanent and inviting you to listen to another adventure of Casey, crime photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Written by Alonzo Dean Cole, our adventure for tonight, Holiday. Thanksgiving Day, early afternoon. Among the crowd that strolls idly by the Blue Note Cafe is a slight, worried-looking man who, unlike the other strollers, doesn't appear to be in a holiday mood.
Biff Connors.
Huh?
Hey, remember me, fella? Casey, Morning Express.
Sure, I remember you. Hey, Casey.
Couldn't be better. Biff, I haven't seen you since...
Gosh, it must be 3 years. So.
Yeah, closer to four.
I guess it is. Miss Williams, let me introduce Mr. Connors.
Hello, Mr. Connors.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Williams.
Heard some nice things about you, Biff. They tell me you're married now, raising a family, got your own business, doing fine.
Yeah, well, I got to be running along.
Huh? Nice seeing you, Casey.
Been introduced to you, Miss Williams. So long.
Well, so long, Biff.
That was short and sweet. Your friend could hardly contain his joy at meeting you.
Yeah.
He looked worried, Casey. I don't think his mind was really on you. Who is he?
Well, he used to be one of the cleverest safecrackers in the country.
Safecracker?
He knew more about safes than the people that make them. Well, he didn't keep him out of jail, though. He served 3 stretches.
You don't usually introduce me to your criminal associates.
Biff wasn't the usual kind of criminal, Annie. Since his last term in the big house, he's going absolutely straight, too. I know that. Yeah, I hope nothing's gone wrong with the guy.
Oh, probably not. Oh, here's the Blue Note.
Let me push open the door for you.
You?
Well, look who's here.
Hi, pal.
Good afternoon, Ethelbert.
Happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
And to you.
In big red letters.
Had your turkey and trimmings yet?
No, we plan to go to a movie and then have dinner about 7 o'clock.
You having it here?
What? Thanksgiving dinner in this joint? Oh, not a chance.
What's the matter with this joint? The chef's putting out a $1.75 special today.
Casey's taking me to the Ritz for dinner. And then we're going to a play.
Yep.
Movies in the afternoon, the Ritz for dinner, and then an evening show, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You are having a holiday.
Mm-hmm. We're not going to waste any of it hanging around here, as much as we love you, Ethelbert.
Oh. Casey, it just came to my mind. As of November 1st, you owe us on your October bill.
Oh, well, that's all right, Ethelbert. Just carry it over to December. I'm going to need all the dough I've got on me today, Annie.
And you'll need all you got on you in December. I don't like the done a pal, Casey, but I know
Casey.
You...
Oh, Biff!
Mr. Connors!
Excuse me for butting in like this, Miss Williams, but Casey, after I left you outside, I got to think...
Well, we're glad to see you again, fella. How about having...
No, thanks. I hope you'll excuse me, Miss Williams. Casey, if I ain't asking too much, well, you step outside with me while... Look, I can talk to you alone.
Well,
I'd appreciate it, Casey, a lot.
Sarah, go ahead, Casey. I'll wait for you here.
Oh, well, okay, Annie, thanks. Okay, Biff.
Thanks a million.
You look awful worried, fella. What's this all about? Are you a busy professional woman, a teacher, a nurse, perhaps a business career girl? Well, Tony Home Permanent is a blessing for busy women like you. It takes so little time to give yourself the most natural-looking wave you've ever had with Tony. You don't have to spend half a day away from home. You don't have to sit under a hot dryer. While your Tony wave is taking, you can listen to the radio, read, do anything you like. This weekend, get the Tony Kit, complete with plastic curlers for just $2. Follow the simple directions and see how convenient it is to give yourself the loveliest wave you've ever had with Tony Home Permanent. The wave that gives that natural look.
T-O-N-I, Tony.
Side street, Casey. It ain't so crowded. We can talk.
Okay, Ben.
I oughtn't wish this on you, Casey. You ain't a guy who owes me anything. After I run into you by accident a while ago, I got to thinking that maybe it was one of them signs. You see, I'd been praying.
Yeah. Well, Ben...
You was always a regular in my book, and I got to thinking that maybe you was the one guy in the world I could turn to for help.
Yeah, well, what kind of help do you need? I'm not so heavy with dough. I had plans for the day, but if you've got to have...
No, I don't want any money.
Oh. Well, you're not in trouble, then. Wait a minute. You in wrong with the cops again?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Casey, I've been 100% straight since I came out of stir last time. I asked you to believe that.
I believe you, Ben.
I, the wife, and I built up a nice little business. We got a store uptown, tobacco, candy, toys, stationery... Things were going along just swell until 2 weeks ago.
What happened then?
A couple of guys come into my store with a proposition. They wanted me to crack a safe.
Yeah?
They offered me $5,000 to do the job.
Nice money.
I told them where to go with it. A couple days later, they come back. They raised their offer to $10,000. They threw them out of the place.
Gone.
Well, that didn't give me nothing. He told me I'd play along with them or else. And then... This morning, I found a loaded .45 caliber automatic under my candy counter.
What, a gun?
Yeah. I'm an ex-con, Casey, a three-time loser. You know what it'd mean for me if the cops found a gat in my possession?
You'd get the book.
Sure, I'd be put away for keeps. The gun was planted under that counter, Casey, sometime during the night. I wrapped it up. I made an excuse to the wife that I had to come downtown, and I went to the North Bridge, and I dropped it in the river.
This gun was left where you'd be sure to find it.
Yeah. It wasn't meant as a frame, just a... There's a hint of what'll happen if I don't play ball.
Have the two guys been around to follow up their hint?
I don't know. I ain't been back to the store.
Oh.
Since I left the bridge, I've just been walking around trying to think. Wife don't know anything about them guys in the proposition. I ain't told her. And I can't tell her. She knows all about my record. You can figure how scared she'd be.
And you haven't told the cops?
Does a guy like me ever run to the cops?
Well, it'd be smart if you ran to them this
time. No.
Why not?
In the first place, they wouldn't believe me. An ex-con. I figure I was trying to put something over. I can't blame him, Casey.
Well, I can tell him.
You've got to promise me you won't.
Well, Biff,
listen. Suppose they did believe me. What happens? They set a trap for the guys who propositioned me. Them guys got friends who'll know that the squeal at the cops acted on had to come from me. My life wouldn't be worth a nickel.
Yeah. Guess you got something.
Promise me you won't say nothing to the cops, Casey. You got to.
Well, what do you want me to do, Biff?
I don't know. I just had to talk to somebody. That's all. For a guy I knew was right, and I ain't got such a good head, Casey. I figured maybe you could figure my way out.
Well, thanks for the compliment. Well, who are the guys that came to you with this proposition?
I don't know. They didn't tell me their names.
When I get around a little, what do they look like?
One was tall and skinny, had a long face and big yellow teeth. He kind of looks like a horse.
Yeah?
The other's a little dark guy, heavy set.
Oh, wait a minute. The one you say that looks like a horse, has he got a long scar on his neck?
Yeah, like somebody done a shift job on it.
Can't be two mugs who answer to that description. Scar neck, horse face, must be Jake Bannister. Head strong arm goon for Nick Reynolds.
Nick Reynolds?
Well, you must know who he is.
Well, the name's familiar, but
hey, you are out of touch with the rackets, kid. Nick Reynolds is the Mr. Big behind some of the dirtiest crooked work that goes on in this town. But he poses as a solid, respectable business guy, and the cops have never been able to nail him. Oh, wait a minute. Tell me more about the little heavy-set mug.
Well, he looks... He's got a cauliflower ear like a pug. And he stinks of perfume.
Hey, Tony, chef. He's another of Reynolds' guys. This is beginning to sound like hot stuff. I don't suppose they told you whose safe they want open, huh?
No.
They tell you anything about it?
Only that it was a small house safe. A real tough one. That's what he needed, an old hotshot like me.
And they offered you dough to crack it, $10,000. They didn't say anything about giving you a share of what's in it.
That's right. I got a notion there isn't any dough in the box to share, Casey. Just something that somebody wants and is willing to pay high for.
Think you can find out from those guys where the box is, the location of the house, and who lives there?
Well, they won't tell me unless I say I'll play ball with them.
No, that's right, they won't. Look, Biff, go back to your store. They ought to be paying you a visit there today after planting that gun. Try to learn all you can. And then... Well, I've made other plans for this afternoon, but I'll stick around the Blue Note. I'll write down the number of a phone booth there so we can talk in private when you call. There. Here it is.
Thanks, Casey.
I got a dinner date for around 7 that I can't break, fella, and then I'll... tied up for the rest of the evening, so if your guys don't show by 7, well, things are going to have to just ride a while, I guess. But in the meantime, I'll be running down a little tip I got on Nick Reynolds.
A tip?
Yeah, it's just a piece of gossip I didn't think much of until I heard your story. Now, it may mean something. Well, so long, Biff. Take it easy now and try not to worry, huh?
Yeah, I'll try, but remember, you promised me, Casey. You won't tell the cops.
Yeah, that's right. I won't tell the cops.
And because your ex-convict friend is so worried, Casey, you leave me sitting here in the Blue Note for most of the afternoon.
Well, I phoned you. I'd be a little delayed,
Annie. Yeah, a little delayed. Look at the time. It's nearly 5 o'clock. You were taking me to the movies this afternoon. Remember?
Oh, please, kid, what's a movie when a guy's in a jam?
Oh, yeah. Poor fellow is in a bad spot.
Yeah, he's in a terrible spot from what Casey's told us, Miss Williams. And I don't see what can be done about it without help from the cops.
And if they're brought into the picture, Ethelbert... Biff would be killed for squealing. Nick Reynolds is behind this thing, and he plays rough.
Casey, you said you've been following up a tip on Reynolds?
Yeah.
What?
You know Monty Summers, Annie? Or the Summers Detective Agency?
Yeah, Summers Blackmail Bureau would be a better name for his outfit.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Summers is a shakedown artist of the dirtiest kind. He's done a lot of work for Nick Reynolds, but he doesn't work for him anymore. There's been a bust-up.
Yeah, I heard that.
Well, my tip was that Summers pulled the old double-cross and collected evidence against his boss, Reynolds, enough to send him away for life. Now, Reynolds is supposed to be paying him plenty to keep that evidence under his hat.
Well, that tip sounds like a phony. Reynolds wouldn't pay a blackmailer. He'd have him bumped off.
Well, sure, like you just said, Casey, Nick Reynolds plays rough.
Yeah, but he's too smart to play rough when he stands to lose by it, though. If Summers has the goods on Reynolds, it's in documentary form. It won't be destroyed by his death. The sense that Summers has convinced his old boss that the stuff will be made public if he's killed or if he disappears.
Yeah, that's so.
But, Casey, what's it got to do with your friend Biff Connors?
Ethelbert, two of Nick Reynolds' trusted hoods offer Biff a flat sum, not a share, to open a house safe.
You mean?
Well, it could be Monty Summers' documentary evidence that Reynolds wants.
I see.
And if it is,
sure. And
we could get it, Casey. Oh, what a story.
What a story. With exclusive pictures, too. It'd be worth missing an afternoon movie for, wouldn't it, kid?
I'll say.
And if the evidence got Nick Reynolds sent to jail, this town would be a much better place to live in. But how is this theory of yours going to help Biff Connors, Casey?
It doesn't. It's a complication. Well, since Biff hasn't phoned, I guess Reynolds' mugs didn't show up at his place. probably taking a holiday off.
No, I'd like a little holiday myself. And away from this place. I'm hungry, Casey. Let's start for the Ritz.
Well, it's not nearly 7 o'clock yet, Annie. I told the guy...
If he phones, I'll tell him you've gone to the Ritz, Casey, and a call.
Oh, no, Ethelbert. I'm not going to have my Thanksgiving dinner spoiled by phone calls for Casey.
Well, you're so anxious to get out of the good old Blue Note, Miss Williams. I thought...
Well, you think again. After we leave here, you tell nobody where to reach us. We're going to have the rest of this day to ourselves.
Yeah, you do as Miss Williams says, pal. Really, nothing I can do for Biff tonight, and... He's going to stall those guys anyway.
Whatever you say, Casey.
Yeah. Well, come on, Annie.
Hmm, at last, we're going places.
Right. So long, Ethelbert.
So long.
Well, Mr. Casey.
Yes, Walter.
Phone call for you in the booth. Mr. Connors.
Uh-oh.
No. No.
Excuse me, Annie.
I might have known, Ethelbert. I might have known.
Hello. Casey speaking.
Connors.
Anything happen?
Plenty. Some guys were here and I couldn't stall them like you told me, Casey.
Couldn't stall them?
No, they said they'd get my wife and kid if I didn't fall in line. They weren't bluffing. I gotta do their job tonight at 12 or else.
12 tonight?
Yeah, I promised them I will and I have to. There's no way you or anybody else can help me now, pal. I just phoned because I said I would and you wouldn't be kept hanging around till 7 o'clock. That's all. So long.
Hey, wait a minute. Don't hang up.
I know you're talking,
Listen,
Casey.
Biff. After you promise those guys that you'll do their job, did they tell you where it's going to be?
Yeah. But you know what you promised me, Casey.
Yeah.
No cops.
You've got to trust me, fella. Now, give me that address, will you?
Okay. It's on Riker Avenue, number 390.
390 Riker.
That's right.
Those two guys will go there with you at 12 tonight?
Yeah, and they'll be watching me every minute, Casey, with guns in their mitts.
Well, listen. Stay in your store. I'll get in touch with you there by 10:30.
You got some plan, Casey? You think there's a chance?
There's a swell chance, Biff. There's every chance. Now, stop worrying, kid. You'll hear from me in a couple of hours. So long.
I got faith in you, Casey. So long.
Oh, faith in a liar. I can't figure any chance.
Looks like, Casey's little friend there is in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm surprised just kind of looking over some stats on how outside of the radio show, I really wasn't familiar with it at all, and even that was something that kind of came along later. It was never one of the big shows. But if you look at other media, a Flash Gun Casey was featured in 21 short stories and Black Mask, a popular pulp magazine at the time. Collections of these stories were published in an anthology form as well. Cox wrote 5 novels featuring Casey from the 1930s to the 1960s. 2 films, Women Are Trouble and Here's Flash Casey, were produced in the 1930s. Timely Comics published 4 issues of a comic book tie-in to the radio show in 1949 with art by Vernon Hinkle, and even had a short run on television from April 19th, 1951, the last one, was June 5th, 1952. Richard Carlyle, of course, who was on movie Tormented, many other movies, but that's when I can think of him off the top of the head. And he was April through June of 1951. And June 51 through April 1952 was a guy named Lyle. That's William Lyle Richardson that we know with his professional name of Darren McGavin. And he was the one that finished off the role on television. He also played, Darren McGavin also played Mike Hammer in the late 50s as well. So he was, as well as our favorite, Carl Kolchak in the 70s.
Hey, that's our boy, Carl Kolchak, the man. You know, every time we play Casey, Crime Photographer Dave, I keep thinking of this 1992 movie called The Public Eye, starring Joe Pesci. It's about a 1940s... Oh. Photographer who specializes in crime.
Ah.
And it's a pretty good movie.
You think I could have been influenced by Casey?
I think. And also, when you think about it, there's a lot of epic crime photographs that we've seen over the years. I mean, you think of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, a lot of this stuff from the...
Right, yeah.
You know, the aftermath of Bonnie and Clyde, just all kinds of things like that. And It was a big thing. Now
yeah,
I think they try to they don't put as graphic of things on, in the newspaper anymore.
Or
on television, you know.
If anything, they're a stringer. They're not somebody who's a regular photographer for the newspaper. It used to be who could get the most fantastic picture and rush it to the paper and get it there. Even Peter Parker did some of that, you know. But,
yeah.
yep.
but, he cheated. He could get great angles that nobody else could get as Spider-Man.
That's true.
Cheater.
But the, you know, the way it's that Casey came out being, not only is he, he's a crime photographer, but he also usually writes the story as well. Or maybe that's what is what the gal does in it as well, or helps him write the story or whatever. But usually the photographers were just photographers. They went out and if you ever watched Lou Grant, and there was Animal, who was their main photographer, and all he did was take pictures. That's all he did. Whether he got them on his own or they sent him on assignment. So, and that was really more of the norm back then. Crossing over the line into being a writer as well was not usually well accepted by the other writers. So,
but there you have it. And with time a-wasting, it's time to wrap up our Thanksgiving broadcasting with Thanksgiving holiday from Crazy Crime Photographer, the exciting conclusion. We'll be back.
Yeah, I know. Don't tell me. We're not heading for the Ritz and turkey dinner.
No. We're going out to look over Monty Summers' house right now.
Oh, you mean Monty Summers, the black kid?
I looked up his address this afternoon just in case. He lives at 390 Riker Avenue. Come on, Annie, let's go.
Yeah, so long, Ethelbert.
So long. No Thanksgiving dinner for you two. Over the thing and through the woods, the primitive house we go. The horse knows the way to carry the sleigh through the something or other.
Hi, Ethelbert. Say, wasn't that Casey and Miss Williams just leaving the Blue Note there?
Oh, hello, Mr. Cullen. Yeah, that was them.
Well, they didn't speak to me.
Well, they was going so fast, they must not have seen you.
Yeah. Why the speed?
Well, they're trying to stop a safe cracker from cracking a safe he don't want to crack.
I don't quite follow you, Ethelbert, but I gather that crime does not take a holiday?
No. And Casey figured it would. He'd promised Miss Williams turkey and trimmings at the Ritz. That's where he made his mistake.
Mistake? Well, I'd call that a pretty sound idea for Thanksgiving Day.
Making a promise to a woman?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Cullen, that's always a mistake.
Oh, no, Ethelbert. Tony made a promise to millions of women, and it's been a great thing for everybody. You see, not many years ago, no one ever dreamed women could give themselves satisfactory permanence right at home. But Tony developed a gentle, cream-cold wave that they knew would give wonderful results with all types of hair. So they made a promise and backed it up with a guarantee. They said, Tony will give you a permanent that lasts just as long as a $15 beauty shop wave and is guaranteed to look more natural or your money back. And women were interested. They tried Tony and the promise came true. They found they can give themselves waves and curls with Tony that are so soft and shiny they look like naturally curly hair. So they told their friends, and what's happened?
You asking me, or is that a reader or oracle question?
I guess everybody knows the answer, Ethelbert. Now, more than 1 million women each month use Tony Home Permanent.
More than 1 million?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of women.
Yes, each month, another 1 million women give themselves lovely Tony waves.
That's a whale of a big house, Annie. Monty Summers lives well.
Oh, now that we're looking at it, Casey, what are you going
to
do?
Annie, we've got to think as though we plan to crack a safe here ourselves.
The easiest to go in and out from the front.
Mm-hmm. See, I think I'd come here in a car. I'd park it under one of these trees. Not directly in front of the house, of course, but close enough for a quick getaway.
And leave a lookout in it?
No, I wouldn't do that. A guy sitting in a parked car might attract attention, which I don't want. I'd post a lookout, but he won't be in the car or even near it most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that that's decided, what do we do?
I don't know, kid. I'm trying to make us think, then. I'm pretty sure that Nick Reynolds will come here himself with Biff and those rodmen tonight.
Mm-hmm.
He trusts nobody but himself to take that evidence out of the safe. He wanted his own hands to take it away and examine it, destroy it.
Well, if there's a chance of getting him, we've got to get the cops in on this.
But they catch Biff opening the safe. In spite of everything that we could say in a guy's favor, the law says that fourth offenders go up for life. We've got to catch Reynolds with the goods and at the same time keep Biff out of it.
Mm-hmm. It's a large order.
Sure is. It is too large, kid. I can't see any way to fill it.
Casey, if you and I came back here at midnight and hid ourselves, when Reynolds and Biff Connors and the others come out, we can cover them with a couple of guns. We'll capture Reynolds and his gang and let Biff Connors get away.
Annie, can you really picture you and me in a gangster movie act like that? We'd only get ourselves shot.
No, I guess we're not the right type. Why aren't we like some of the characters we see in the movies? They solve everything so easily by just drawing their crusty automatic and going bang, bang, bang.
If we were.
What am I, a woman or a mouse? In that western we saw last week, a gal my size captured a dozen tough cattle rustlers all by herself.
Well, her boyfriend was pretty good, too, don't
we? Tall, dark, and handsome in the fancy pants. He was certainly a shock with a lariat, too.
He lassoed the character who tried to steal Grandpappy's beef ranch. He yanked him off his pinto pony so hard I kind of got aching bones, mister.
It's so easy in the movies.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this line of thinking isn't getting us anywhere.
No, I'm for... Wait a minute. Maybe it is.
Huh?
Lasso. Man. Horse.
Casey, what is...
I've got an idea, Annie.
You have?
Yeah, come on, get in the car. I'll tell you about it. We're on our way to borrow something that I'll need. Then I'll get to Biff Connor and tell him honestly that he has a swell chance. Got a chance, Casey? You bet you have every chance.
Tell me.
Not yet. You tell me about the setup for tonight, as you got it from Reynolds' rodman.
Plan to meet him a couple of blocks from here, see, at 11 o'clock,
yeah.
Like I told
yeah,
you.
That's right.
They'll be in a black sedan. They'll have the tools they'll need for the safe job.
Mm-hmm.
Then we drive right out to the Riker Avenue house. They say the guy who owns the joint won't be there. That's why the job's got to be done tonight. It's only a servant in the house, and he's been fixed.
Well, they don't look for any trouble, then, huh?
No, they claim it'll be a set.
Do for a surprise. You're the only one who's not headed for trouble.
Casey, tell me what...
No. The less you know about this whole thing, the better for you. But I want you to be sure to do three things.
Yeah?
First, after you open the safe, don't let any of the guys with you destroy anything they take out of it. Act scared. Insist on getting out of the house right away.
Okay.
All right. Now, second, when you reach the getaway car, get into the back seat.
Back seat?
Yeah. Third, take a grip on the front seat and brace yourself. Brace yourself with all the muscle that you've got.
They've been in that house over an hour, Casey.
Yeah. Monty Summers' safe must be really tough. Reynolds had to get an expert like this job.
You're sure it was Nick Reynolds that we saw go into the house?
Yes, dead sure. He went in with Biff and Horseface.
Yeah.
And Reynolds' presence here, Annie, means that we guessed right about his deep personal interest in that safe.
That explosion.
That's from inside the house. It means Biff has had to blow the safe.
Well, then it's open now, and they'll soon be coming out.
That's right.
You're certain the lookout didn't see what you did a while ago.
No, of course he didn't. He was at the end of the block across the street when I was working in the dark.
Oh, I hope the work you did worked.
Yes, trust old cowboy Casey. And quiet. Keep back any shadows that are coming from the house now.
And fast. Reynolds is carrying the briefcase.
I see it. The lookout set himself in the car. He's going to drive.
Start the motor.
As soon as the others get in, I'll help him make a good, fast getaway.
If he doesn't start that car fast...
Leave that to me. The others are in the car now.
Reynolds has taken the front seat beside the driver.
That's perfect.
Now they're all in.
It's time for me to impersonate a cop. Here goes. Hey, you fellas in that car!
You made the driver step on the gas, kid.
And hard. It won't be long now.
Casey, the scheme worked.
Couldn't fail. Come on, we got to get Biff out of there.
Yeah.
Hope he braced himself.
Yeah, well, if he didn't,
Oh, look, a man's calling from another
car. Okay, fella, it's me.
What happened to the car? There's nothing in front of us. There's nothing there now. Suddenly the thing stopped like we hit a stone wall.
I see your three playmates went half through the windshield.
Yeah, they're out cold. Casey, what?
Never mind. You haven't got time to ask any questions now. Around that corner, you'll find a black Ford coupe. Here's the key. Get in, drive home quick as you can. And if anybody ever asks you, say you've never been near Riker Avenue. Come on, Biff, get going quick.
Okay, pal, whatever you say, but I'd sure like to know what happened to that car.
See what the sleeping Mr. Reynolds has in his briefcase.
Yeah, I want to see.
A lot of letters, canceled checks, photographs. All incriminating, I imagine. Now, Annie, we'll call the cops.
And then, Casey, you think a gal may safely hope for a bite of dinner?
For soft water shampooing, use Tony Cream Shampoo. Even in the hardest water, Tony Cream Shampoo.
Yes, even in the hardest water, Tony Cream Shampoo gives soft water shampooing that rinses away dandruff instantly, leaves hair so soft, so smooth, so shining clean. Today, bring out the sparkling beauty of your hair with soft water shampooing. Get the handy tube or jar of Tony Cream Shampoo. It's new.
I'm terribly sorry we can't get you and Casey nothing better out of the kitchen than this cold turkey, Miss Williams. But, of course, the cooks left hours ago.
Oh, I just love cold turkey, Ethelbert. And at this hour of the morning. So much nicer than the dinner I expected to have at the Ritz.
Yeah, well, I'm awful sorry, Annie. I certainly gummed up your day, didn't I?
Don't you ever know when I'm kidding, Casey. I've had a swell day. A real day for Thanksgiving, because we accomplished something worthwhile.
Your pal, Ed.
Say, you ain't told me yet how you made that car stop like it had hit a stone wall.
Hmm. You've seen a lot of Wild West movies, Ethelbert.
Sure.
Well, then you've seen men pulled off running horses with lassos.
Lots of times.
And the horse always kept on running.
Yeah.
Well, now imagine the horse was lassoed, not the rider.
The horse had stopped dead.
And its rider would keep on going over its head.
Well, that's what happened to the crook's getaway car.
You lassoed that car, Casey?
Well, it amounted to that.
Casey brought a very strong 150-foot steel cable out there, Ethelbert.
Yeah, with a hook at both ends.
Now, in the darkness, he hooked one end of his cable to the axle of that car and the other end to a big tree.
And I made a noise like a cop to startle the driver into a good, fast start.
And when the cable paid out to its limit...
Oh, I get it. Yeah, and the only reason Biff Connors wasn't knocked through the windshield like the others was because he'd braced himself, like you told him.
That's right. Even he was a little dazed when he climbed out, though.
Oh, well. Anyway, Reynolds and his mob are all washed up, thanks to the stuff in that briefcase. They can't hurt Biff Connors or anyone else.
Hmm. You two had quite a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
A grand one. Have some more cold turkey, Casey?
Yeah, I think I will, Annie.
And it didn't cost you anything. You saved money by not going to the movies, to the Ritz for dinner, and to a play after.
Well, sure, that's right. Yeah.
You can't need all the dough you got on you.
Of course not.
Huh? I hate to dun a friend, Casey, but there's a little matter of that long overdue October bill. And
he's got you, Casey. I'm dead to rights.
If this isn't an ending for a grand day, here I've been roped in myself.
Well, as my sister Edna says, quote, if you give a calf enough rope, he can't be led to wolf. No, you can lead a calf before he crosses. I'll be darned if I don't forget it. unquote.
Well, all right, pal, after that. Here's what I owe you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving, Ethelbert.
Happy Thanksgiving to all.
Crime Photography.
Photographer, starring Stotts Cotsworth as Casey, is directed by John Deeth. It's written by Alonzo Dean Cole and is based on the fictional character of Flash Gun Casey, created by George Harmon Cox. Original music by Archie Blyer, and the program features Miss Jan Miner as Anne and John Gibson as Ethelbert. Herman Chittison as the Blue Note pianist. This is Bill Cullen asking you to listen again next week at this same time to another exciting adventure of Crime Photographer, and also inviting you to listen to This is Nora Drake, radio's thrilling serial romance, heard every Monday through Friday, 2:30 p.m. New York time, over most of these stations. Both of these programs brought to you each week by Tony Home Permanent, the wave that gives that natural look, and the new Tony Cream Shampoo for soft water shampooing, even in the hardest water. This is CBS, where 99 million people gather every week, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Bill Cullen, was that the same guy from game show fame, Dave?
Yeah, I remember him from To Tell the Truth, I believe, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. He and I think Gary Moore did that as well. Wonderful. Bill Cullen did actually quite a few game shows, both as panelist and as a host. Yeah.
Yes, he was on some of the, like, I've Got a Secret type shows. He was
right.
A frequent panelist.
Yeah. Right. And probably could be in the 50s as well, when I didn't get to see a lot of those shows. But in the 60s, I did get to see several of them. And he was one of the, he was either a panelist or a host on one show or another. So, yeah, but yeah, that's that was that same Bill Cullen.
That was the guy. Now, next week, it's back to true and terrifying horror. Because it's all about brides.
Yes,
that's right.
I set this show up in honor of my anniversary coming up on December 7th, a day which shall live in infamy.
Yes, it will. Yeah, we're celebrating my daughter's... My daughter's birthday, too. How ironic.
and if I ever forget it, it'll be World War III breaking out. Yeah. It's funny because Holly on my show, Holly Shieldtown.
Yeah.
Dale, that's her birthday. It's also her parents' anniversary.
Wow. A lot going on.
So,
it's going to be a busy weekend. Yeah, my daughter's birthday, too.
I always send her a text, "Happy birthday to my TV wife," and she she sends back a text, "Ha ha ha, thanks TV husband."
Yeah, some great stories. We got The Weird Circle, The Shadow, and Suspense. That's just on Friday at 8:30 Eastern, and then on Saturday next week, 1 week from tonight, another bride's night with. More Weird Circle and Michael Shane.
And something else also happens on December 7th after our show, about 10:30 p.m. The Spaceship One premieres, will premiere on the Vortex HorrorHost.net. It'll be there Saturday night with the very first episode number one.
We have to see that.
So,
I will make sure I make that Red Letter Night. That's 1 week from tonight, right?
1 week from tonight. Absolutely.
Yep. You can bet Dave will be sending out links for you to check that out, and you don't want to miss Spaceship One. Want to thank everybody for stopping in today. Ed, Ricanora, Fogsbane, Vorpal Bite. Thank you so much for dropping by and sharing some of these old-time radio shows with us.
And some of our silliness to go along with it. We appreciate you being here for that. But yes, and Monday night on the Vortex HorrorHost.net, you'll find Mike Mainstay Binkley, Al Clash.
The castle lights are growing dim.
Whoops. Sorry, Dave.
But me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
It's Dave on the Vortex Monday night. Just be there. Or
Monday
I hope
night.
Not that.
Nine. At nine. At nine. Anytime.
Just, they can sit there and wait, you know? They don't have to know what time. They can sit there and wait.
Yeah.
God.
Yes. Yeah. My.
So I watched the Irish real quick, Dave, because I know you know we're going to keep this short. I watched the Irishman yesterday, a 3.5-hour Martin Scorsese film, but it was pretty good. Everybody on Earth was in it, and it was pretty much the story of the last.
Jimmy Green, wasn't it?
No, Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh, Jimmy Hoffa. Okay, okay.
Based on a story told by a gentleman who died a few years ago, who finally figured everybody involved in this is dead, I can finally spill my guts. And supposedly, well, I don't want to play spoiler. You need to watch the movie. But it's this person has intimate knowledge of what happened to Jimmy Hoffa, supposedly. And Scorsese, of course, put it in film on Netflix only. But you can bet that it will appear other places after a time.
Well, I got some bad news for you. I've already seen it posted somewhere else. I can get it. So I can get it.
Good. Yeah, when you got 3.5 hours to kill.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out when that's going to be. You know, because I've had two other people who told me they've seen that now. And they have absolutely loved it. So.
Yeah. Well, Dave, get along there, you know, take care of yourself, and we will do more radio next weekend.
Yep. Got time to raise my leg and salute, so there we go.
There you go. Whatever it takes, my man, whatever it takes.
We'll do what we can. And I guess one thing we can do right now, I guess, is bring in Sir James to say goodnight.
Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
And now, folks, it's time to say good night. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.